This is a HeadGum Original.
It's a little bit, it's sort of like, you know, after Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you have the Great Glass Elevator.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like you think you've had all the adventures you're going to have with the Chocolate Factory. Mm-hmm. But then you have this Great Glass Elevator that just bursts right through and goes into outer space. And I feel like because this is a song that literally already is like in the stratosphere, we're blasting off into the great unknown. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who knows what's possible? Yeah. Maybe I think it's in the spirit of the song to like let's take it even higher.
And it's also like the Great Glass Elevator because it's levitating.
It's levitating.
Yeah. We're leaving the confines of the Chocolate Factory with this one. We're leaving the confines of half-baked classic rock songs from the 70s that could use a little updating. And we're going off into the outer space realms of pop songs that have been crafted so finely. Every second is accounted for in a hit like this that you think that there's no room to improve. But a guiding principle of this show is that no song is unpunchable. No song cannot be punched.
Let's punch it.
Every single week they tell us that it can't be done. You can't take this great song and make it better. You cannot punch this up. And yet every week, here we are on Punch Up the Jam, taking the greatest songs. And every time, without a doubt, indisputably, we come up with a version of the song that is better by almost every single metric. This week we're talking about Levitating by Dua Lipa, and we've got to do an in-depth investigation. We really got to uncover some stuff here because everybody knows this song is already nearly perfect, so what the heck are we going to do? And we've enlisted maybe the best possible help for this investigation. I'm talking about a man now known worldwide in the art form of podcasts for doing in-depth archival investigation, introspection, turning over the most minute pieces of evidence.
Introspection that really crosses into existentialism, I would say. We're here this week with Connor Ratliff of the podcast Dead Eyes, just one of my favorite all-time podcasts.
Oh, thank you so much.
Connor, welcome to the show.
And I'm just going to say, you know, you can't watch his podcast, but I'm going to say, Connor, your eyes aren't dead at all. They're lively, bordering on sparkling.
Inviting.
That's so nice to hear.
And I'm just going to say, even if your eyes were dead, could you do like the elevator pitch of your podcast for those who aren't familiar with it, Connor?
Yeah, it's a comedic nonfiction podcast where the starting point for it is a real thing that happened to me in the year 2000. I auditioned for and was cast in a small role, the role of Private Zelinsky in episode 5 of Band of Brothers. Just has a few lines.
He's got to go get a sandwich, a bacon sandwich for his boss.
Just an orderly who's shuffling papers and getting tea and coffee. And, you know, I'd had my costume fitting. I'd had my hair cut down to military specifications.
No.
We were ready to film the next day. And I got a message, frantic phone call from my agent's office. This is my agent's assistant. Delivered me the message that you need to get to Hatfield Air Base right away. Tom Hanks has seen your audition tape, and he's having second thoughts. He thinks you have dead eyes. So I had to go. I was escorted to the air base for a re-audition in person.
And Tom Hanks is the director and producer of this episode,
yeah,
right?
He was directing that episode, which was the best news in the world until suddenly it wasn't. Oh, good. Tom Hanks is directing my episode, and then shortly after that, he doesn't want you to be in it, maybe. And I did the re-audition, and then I was fired. And I thought this would be a funny thing to explore and make a podcast about.
I mean, what has haunted me as I listen to the podcast, though, is like, let's say, theoretically, you did have dead eyes, mm-hmm. which we already confirmed you don't.
Sure.
Maybe you did in 2002.
Very subjective.
Who would be better for the part of a man about to enter into the hell that was D-Day than a person with dead eyes. Why wouldn't you want the orderly to be haunted? He's sending and receiving telegrams about deaths. His brother probably just died. He had to call his mom.
I mean, this is why it's a mystery worth exploring. There's a lot of questions that can be raised, and questions that I have raised on the podcast, which is we've done 31 episodes. We actually reached the point at the end of our most recent season where in episode 31, I meet with and talk to Tom Hanks. I would suggest if people are going on discovering it, I've been told, and I believe this to be true, that it's much more satisfying. I mean, you could just skip right to dessert. You could go right to dessert cart and just start eating pie.
Then you miss who the special surprise guest is in episode two. You got to hear that episode.
You don't start watching the MCU with Avengers Assemble.
I will say is when you arrived, Connor, I was talking about what a fan of the podcast I was. And then right before we started taping, I think you realized that I had not listened to the latest episodes. I saw a look of realization, true disappointment in your heart. You thought
envy,
I was lying to you.
Envy.
But for me,
for what you have ahead of you, this Tom, because hearing Tom Hanks talk about this is a delight. So I look forward to your experience that you will have hearing
it. But honestly, like where I'm at, it's like, every once in a while, you read a book that is so good, you get to like the last 30 pages,
mm-hmm.
and you start reading it slower.
Yeah,
and that's kind of where I'm at. Like looking dead at the Tom Hanks episode, it's like, do I want to get there? The suspense has been so great and thrilling and funny that I honestly am like, I don't know if I'll ever listen to it. I hate to say it to your face, but
well, it's fine. Carpe diem, seize the day. That's what I tell you.
So Connor, sometimes we pick the songs. Sometimes our guest picks the songs. This was your pick, Levitating by Dua Lipa. What made you just at the drop of a hat say 100% Dua Lipa, Levitating? That's the song I'm doing on Punch Up the Jam.
I just like this song. I think it's fun to listen to. And I'm intrigued at the possibility of punching it up because there are lots of songs that you listen to the song and you think, well, this could benefit from another pass. We can definitely punch this up. I thought this would be a fun challenge because it's such a joyous song to listen to that the idea that we could theoretically punch this up was exciting to me.
Yeah, it's pretty perfect. It's a challenge, and I'm not exactly sure how we're going to do it, and that's why we're glad that you're here.
Well, let's talk about what is it that we all love about this song. Can I play the intro for you guys, and we'll just talk about how it strikes you?
I would be disappointed if you didn't.
There is something about the opening chords that is so inviting immediately. That retro synth, what would you even describe that sound as?
It almost sounds like it's a voice that's been modified to sound like a synth. Like it feels like it's speaking. The music sounds like it's speaking even though there are no words. But it kind of almost sounds like someone was just saying like, wow, 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 wow,
yes.
Wow. And then they bent it into something else.
There's also something about that noise is so, that synthesizer sound, it is a synthesizer. It is a Roland VP-330. But, and it's just the basic like out of the box choir sound from that synthesizer, which is amazing to me.
Oh, so it is meant to emulate on some level the human voice and that shape, that vowel shaping sound you're talking about. Wow.
And that synth is famous for also having a vocoder on it, but this is the out of the box choir sound. But what I love is when that snare comes in.
Yeah.
It's like the softest synthesizer sound, this like wow, wow choir juxtaposed against this ka ka.
Yeah, because the opening sound repeats so many times at the beginning that it very immediately lulls you into the sense that, oh, this is what I'm going to hear. This is what the song will sound like. And that snare comes in and is sort of like, no more different things. It's this sound. Yeah. It's just this sound. No more. There's other sounds. And it's sort of that snare is kind of like a surprise on top. Like if the song is a surprise party, you open the door and you see everybody that you know. And they're just like, wow, 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 wow. And you're just looking at all your friends. And you're like, oh, of course. And then Batman jumps in.
Oh.
Batman's here.
I thought you were going to say you see the artichoke dip.
Could be that. Everyone has a different thing. I was just thinking how surprising it would be. Not someone in a Batman costume. Actual Batman.
Actual Batman. Okay.
The Batman.
I'm with you now.
jumps in and you think, I wasn't expecting this. A surprise party with all my friends, I'm surprised.
But it's not, but also it's like, not outside of your universe.
I know what a surprise party is, and this fits that explanation. And then the Dark Knight himself jumps into the room, and you're like, well, this is not what I was expecting.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I have to ask a follow-up question about Batman in this scenario.
Sure.
Is Batman there because it's after dark and he's invited and he likes parties, or is you or one of your friends a criminal?
I don't think it's that.
He's just there. Okay.
I without ruining too much, I have to spoil something. Batman is actually Bruce Wayne.
What?
A successful, wealthy businessman.
I'm sorry. Why are we talking about Bruce Wayne, self-made billionaire?
He uses his money to, he has a double life. He's not one thing. He's two things.
Wow. I mean, the fact that you're saying that live on a podcast makes me think that you are a supervillain because you're out here trying to spread around, spread his secret identity around.
I don't know why
this
more.
Is the first thing every Batman supervillain does is go on like a megaphone and say like, Batman is Bruce Wayne Gotham.
Yeah, it's a game changer. Uh-oh. No, but you could replace it with any fictional character that you would not be expecting in reality.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too hung up on the plot specifics of the surprise party because it's more just an example that I'm using as a vibe. It could be SpongeBob.
Yes. We have the softest sound imaginable interrupted by the hardest sound imaginable.
Yeah, and it's just like, I was not expecting this. It could be, you know, the Queen. It could be, you know, just there's some new thing that's very exciting that breaks up what in just a few seconds already feels like this is a world we're building.
Mm-hmm.
No, this.
Yeah.
Here's a new thing that's immediately going to, like, don't get comfortable.
Yeah, every song, certainly every pop song, is from second zero building a world.
Mm-hmm.
You're arriving at these sounds anew. It's not like in the 1770s where you go to a concert, you know exactly what sounds you're going to hear.
Mm-hmm.
The violins and the horns are all going to sound like they did last week, and you're just interested in what are the configurations of notes. You listen to a pop song now, every world is new from the beginning of the song. What are the sounds that are drawing you in? Does it feel like you're on a different planet, or does it feel like you're at a dinner party with Batman in Gotham City? Could be any of those things, but within a few seconds, this world has really expanded. It's gone from this, this wow-wow synth into this hard dance beat. And I don't think it's not wrong to bring a superhero into the vibe. I mean, for me, this song feels like a superhero's anthem. Somebody might soar above a city.
And quick diversion about the synth is that one of the two songwriters, he and Dua Lipa actually did an amazing interview on Song Exploder about this. This is like a much sought after vintage synth that is very hard to find because there weren't a lot of them made. Mm-hmm. You know, people are trying to buy them up.
Mm-hmm.
He finally found one. He got it back to his home in Canada. And the legend that he has painted, at least, is that those chords are the first chords he ever played on his new to him vintage Roland VP330. Mm-hmm. And this is just like the first thing that came out of his fingers, which like puts it up there with like, Hey Ya, in terms of like Andre 3000 learned to play guitar. Those are the first chords he ever played. And then he was like, what if this was the song Hey Ya? Like that and this are the two best songs ever that I know of to be the first thing that someone played on an instrument.
Let me listen to this next bit. You'll notice that throughout this song, those chords never stop. He played them once. He fell in love with it. Now a lot of other elements get added here, and here's where the vocal comes in. I'll say about this verse, yeah, it's about dancing, it's about partying with the interstellar imagery, but the main thing that is really jumping out to me is how Dua Lipa's voice is just like a percussion instrument on this thing. It's so rhythmic, the cadence of it. It's just keeping the motion going almost like a hi-hat or a shaker, but with the power of her vocal.
Another thing she's doing that's really putting into that category is listening back to it, the volume of her voice is so consistent through the line, right? Generally, when you think about like musical singing phrasing, you think about like, well, that word is going to be louder than this other word. This is just like an almost chromatic stair step melodically, but in terms of the volume of each note, it's a constant almost.
The thing that jumps out at me is how conditional the opening the opening lyrics are.
Mm-hmm.
It's all based on what you, the listener, if you want to run away with me,
mm-hmm.
if you're feeling like you need a little bit of company. If not, fair enough. Move on. This
you
is
could
not,
stay here on Earth.
Yeah. This is all optional. This is depending on how you feel.
Right.
Very considerate. It's a considerate song. Because a lot of party anthems don't take into consideration whether or not you are interested in partying.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Celebration time. Come on. Okay. A little aggressive.
It's imperative.
It's celebration time. Come on.
Yeah, get
don't
out on the dance floor, you jerk.
You don't. You have no idea what's going on with me today.
That's exactly right.
Just announcing that it's celebration time. Come on. Don't shame me into celebrating.
It's so generous for her to put it to us in that invitation.
Yeah.
Consider this. If
you want to run away with me, just FYI, I know a galaxy, mm-hmm. and I can take you for a ride. If not, no harm, no foul. Maybe another time.
I just want to say something else about her generosity here, which is that this is not just an invitation to any old dance floor.
No.
You know, come out with me and try a two-step or not.
No.
This is an invitation with real stakes, and we know from our shared cinematic history that once you make a decision to begin living your life in space,
mm-hmm.
you don't go back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Star-Lord didn't go off to guard the galaxy and then get to return to his life on Earth.
That's a great point, yeah.
She had a premonition that collectively, like, we fell into a rhythm
mm-hmm.
where the music don't stop for life. This is not something to be taken lightly.
Yeah, Luke mm-hmm. ain't going back to Tashi Station after he leads the rebellion.
Once if you want to run away with me, I know this place, but be forewarned, I had a vision that if we go to this place, we will fall into a rhythm where the music will never end, ceaseless for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least for, not for eternity, but for the time in which we are alive.
Yeah. That sounds really great.
Mm-hmm.
I'll acknowledge that I've never experienced that, utterly ceaseless music for eternity, so I could see how there could be a downside to that. Maybe you get...
But or it could just be for, you know, however many years we have left.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like it's going to be nonstop music until you die and then maybe silence.
Now, I will say, I mean, I love this point, Connor, that this is very conditional. But I think also just because of her flat affect mm-hmm. in delivering it, she seems like she would be genuinely unbothered if you didn't come.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, if she was delivering this more urgently, saying conditionally, if you do this, there'd kind of be an undertone that's like, yeah, but I'm going to be pretty pissed off if you don't come with me to outer space.
It's right. Not a hard sell. And you do get the feeling that, like, she's making a case, saying, you know, this would be the perfect time, but only if you're feeling like you need a little bit of company.
Mm-hmm.
If you, then me.
Mm-hmm. And that coyness makes me want to say yes, as opposed to if Katy Perry were yelling this at me, baby, let's go to a galaxy, I'd be more inclined to say, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good where I'm at, and I don't feel like a firework.
It's actually so effective at persuading me because it's not needy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, if this, then that. But otherwise, you know, you've been told. Do with this what you will.
So Dua Lipa has drawn you out of your shell with this mm-hmm. first verse.
Yeah.
But, allow me to play this next section. There's a amount of musical variety here, notwithstanding the fact that the chords don't change.
Mm-hmm.
There's more sections, shall we say, than you maybe get in a typical song. And there's a lyrical turn here about the relationship between us, the listener, and do with an alien. Let's see what we got. You want me, I want you, baby. My sugar boo, I'm levitating. The Milky Way, we're renegading. Yeah, I got you. Ooh.
Mm.
So good.
A lot of distinct phrases here. You want me. Now, this is the first phrase that has any any element of, I would say, light aggression.
Attraction?
Well, just like, it's a statement that's very presumptuous. You want me. Because mm-hmm. before it was all like, if this. It's not if you want me. It's you want me, mm-hmm. followed by, I want you, baby. So it's like, it's mirroring that presumptive statement, but adding in then a term of endearment. You want me. I want you, baby. My sugar boo. We now have possessive, mm-hmm. along with, I would say, an escalation from baby to sugar boo.
Oh, extreme term of endearment. Not everybody's your sugar boo. That term hasn't even existed prior to this song, as far as I know.
My sugar boo, followed by a pretty big reveal. I'm levitating. This is the title of the song.
Mm-hmm.
I'm levitating.
I've actually left gravity. The implication is due to the level of desire I'm feeling.
Yeah, they vibrated off the ground.
Yeah. And then we leave the realm of sort of I and you statements. The Milky Way.
Mm-hmm.
Just a declarative, shall we say, fact? And then we're renegating. So now we've gone from the I and you thing to now it's we're renegating. And then, and this is what I think is the real power move. Yeah. And it sounds like more voices are coming in for the first time, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting what line she's choosing to sing by herself and what line she's putting on like a whole chorus of vocals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do. I guess I have maybe a question to pitch here, which is in the verse a few months ago, she said that she knew a galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I can connect to this standalone mention of the Milky Way.
Yeah.
Is the Milky Way the galaxy that she knew? Because quite frankly, that's the one we all know.
Yes.
That's the main galaxy that you could get to from here.
From a more cynical songwriting perspective, I'm just going to throw out there, is the reason that Milky Way's in the song is because it kind of rhymes with levitating, guys? I think maybe so.
How does it rhyme with levitating?
I'd say on a really slanty way, levitating, really Milky Way.
I think there's an assonance there is attractive to songwriters.
The Milky Way. I'm levitating.
Levitating.
I don't know that I hear the rhyme.
You're not going to give it to me.
The Milky Way. I love that. The Milky Way.
It's much more about, for me, the percussive rhythmic alignment.
There's a vibe. There's a vibe that mirrors there, a feel, but I don't know if I'm feeling the rhyme there. It's such a slant rhyme that I feel like the rhyme, it slants to a point where the rhyme just slides right off.
Yeah. Even if you don't call it a hard rhyme, I think the one thing that I will allow Andrew here is that in our era, say, like if you're in a form like rap that everyone thinks requires a lot of rhyming, well, you can really get away with a lot if you just have the same vowel sounds and that feels like everything is connected.
I guess the question I have is the options are that the galaxy at the beginning, it either is or is not the Milky Way. Let's assume for a second that it is the Milky Way.
Okay.
Is she being playful? Sort of like if I was like, hey guys, I know a certain city that never sleeps.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then it turns out it's New York. It's where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it a thing where she's being a little coy, like, hey, I know a podcast where they talk about punching up some songs?
Yeah.
It's this one that we're on.
Yeah, you see your wife at home and you're like, come here often?
Yeah, I think it could be that. Or is it something where, you know, like you discover something and you think like nobody else knows about it and it turns out everybody knows about it. You're like, oh, am I the last to find out?
Yeah.
Hey, I know a galaxy. It's called the Milky Way. And they don't realize that. Yeah, that's our galaxy. I thought you knew a different one.
Right, it's 1988. Have you heard about Studio 54? We should go.
My sense is, if we had to call it, I get the sense that it's a come here often. It's a playful thing where it's like, you know, the galaxy that I know, it's the one we've lived our whole lives in.
You know why I'm on board with this theory is that the spirit of this song is whimsy and winking. I would utterly believe she's winking at us. And the come here often thing, I think, really supports this last line of, let's call this the pre-chorus, this thing that we just had. You want me, I want you, baby. The last thing we heard is, yeah, with this big group of voices. And that's the first time we hear that big group singing in what sounds like a giant party. Mm-hmm. You are already out at that club. You're out in the galaxy. It's a party over there with a bunch of people going, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah. It's really a lot of effective persuasion tactics in this song, because I do think that the conditional aspect of the beginning is more about easing the person in rather than thinking that they have a choice. I think there's a confidence that, like, you're going to want to levitate.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you get to yeah, 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 I mean, not to jump ahead too much, but the next line sort of is like a reveal from that.
100%. 100% that I think the best way we could say it is that, is she actually asking a question, if you want to run it with me, or is this a rhetorical device from an expert? You know, yeah. How many times does somebody start a sentence by saying, like, well, to be honest, dot, 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 did you ever think they weren't going to be honest?
Yeah.
Was that important to the sentence, or was it just to draw you in?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is sort of like we're starting off with, like, hey, if you're interested and if you'd like, da, da, da. And then by the time you get to yeah, 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 the next thing is, I got you.
Oh, yeah. But at that point, her arm is around you. You're in.
I know the emphasis is, I got you. But I think there's a little bit of subtext that's like, I got you.
I mean, hindsight being 2020, at this point in the song, I'm looking back to that first conditional line. Were they already levitating when the first line was sung? They might have already been levitating.
I think this might be a little bit like when you're learning to ride a bike, and it's like the parent is holding the back of the bike, but then they let go, and the kid doesn't know yet. I think you're right. I think the levitating is already beginning in that first part, and it's sort of like, hey, can I interest you in levitating?
Yeah, but
while you're considering it, you don't realize you're already flying through the Milky Way.
Yeah, but instead of a parent helping a kid ride a bike, it's about sex.
Yeah. It should be clear. The song is about sex.
We said it. We said it out loud. Speaking of I got you, I'm ready to play this chorus, which utterly slaps.
And there we have it. We find it arrive at the lyric from Celebration Time, come on. Like, we got there. Celebration Time leads with it. Celebration Time, come on. Eventually, you're gonna reach that place. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
You're out on the dance floor already at this point.
Yeah.
The party atmosphere continued. Like, these other revelers showed up with, yeah, 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 yeah. And now the gang is there. They're all singing along. There's, I don't know, must be 10 copies of the vocal in there singing, you, moonlight, all singing along. So now you feel like you're in the middle of the crowd, and it's no longer, it feels less imperative when she goes, come on, dance with me, because you're no longer overhanging out by the wall. You're out in the middle of the floor at this point.
Yeah.
It's just further enticement.
And that lyric could, in lesser hands, that could come off as whiny. Come on, dance with me.
Yeah.
Come on.
Say the voice of a Tom DeLonge.
Come on, dance with me. I don't get that vibe here. I'm not hearing that.
Yeah, no, me neither. This is encouragement from a partner who's happy you're there.
Yeah. I really like the way whenever I'm levitating is sung, it's always so far in that I'm levitating. It's very matter of fact. I'm levitating. I'm eating salad. I'll be there later. It's all just like, it's delivered as if it's just, it's not a headline news. This isn't like war, you know, like levitating. It's not just like big capital. It's just like, it's what I'm doing.
Yeah. And as a justification for come on, dance with me, because by the way,
I'm levitating.
There's so much about the song that is just tossed off. Her delivery, like we're in the same chord changes. The lyric that to me is like really tossed off in the chorus, but that I love, is just like, moonlight, starlight. It's just like,
I have a dollar. It's just like, it's the most mundane phrases work with that music. It's just like, I'm there on Tuesday. It's just sort of like,
I'll be here all night.
Yeah.
It's only these five notes, which are the most five basic notes
college.
In pop music writing.
Yeah. I have a toaster. It's just like any mundane thing that you can say works with those notes.
And it puts...
My dad's a doctor.
It puts levitating in this in the same category.
Yeah.
It could be any verb that you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm salivating.
Ooh. Hey, that's a good spoof.
That's it. That could be it.
I'm salivating.
That could be it.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be too dirty. It might be too
raunchy. No, because it's about food. It's, you know, it's like the classic Weird Al food.
Yeah, that's
spoof.
The classic Weird Al
I'm salivating.
Move. And then the verse is we list different types of hoagies.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
Okay, let's put that in our back pocket.
Yeah.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. No spoofers.
I drive a Hyundai.
On to the second verse. This part's the same as first time around. Ooh. So there's a few new ideas in the verse too. I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy.
Yeah. It's a lot more, you know, it's a lot more about what she believes, what she feels, what she sees. A lot of, we can go whatever, let's do it.
It's confirming this whole thing earlier about, like, well, I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm. Well, here she's really revealing that, well, actually, I believed it
also,
the whole time.
We are firmly confirming that the galaxy that she was referring to is the Milky Way. Because she's saying, let's get lost on Mars.
Yeah, that's well within.
This is full confirmation of the galaxy. This is obviously the galaxy that she was thinking of.
Guys, I'm gonna ask a dumb question. This is a dumb astronomy question, but like, the Earth is in the Milky Way, right?
Yeah.
The Earth is
can confirm.
Like when you look into the sky, you see the Milky Way,
right?
But the Earth is in it, right?
Yeah.
So we're good. That's from an astronomy standpoint, maybe a failing of the song, right? She's going to this galaxy far away, the Milky Way. Well, guess what, Dua Lipa? It's where we already are.
I think you're
standing in the Milky Way right now.
I think that's what we're saying is that when she says, I know a galaxy, we actually haven't left our own galaxy. She knows this galaxy, and it's great.
Yeah.
This is the basis of your guys' come here often thesis.
This is our come here often thesis.
To quote Elvis Costello, home is anywhere you hang your head. And I think that's essentially what she's saying here, which is just like, you don't need to go to some other galaxy to levitate and experience this kind of otherworldly galactic feeling. We've got plenty of things to do right here in the Milky Way. It's almost like one of those things where like the tourist board trying to convince you, like, why not try out some of our local attractions?
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to go into some other galaxy. Let's go get lost on Mars.
The otherworldly feeling that you would get bouncing around on the Mars rover, you can get right here on Earth just looking into Dua Lipa's eyes.
There's no place like home.
Wow.
You know, why go to Cancun when we have such lovely beaches here at Tampa, St. Petersburg?
From a cynical perspective, I'm just going to say, easy for Dua Lipa to say. You know, I mean, from my purview as like a fan of Dua Lipa, it's like who's had a more exciting, fun, cool 4 years than Dua Lipa? It's like 4 years ago, she hadn't even put out her first album. Now this is like the biggest song in the history of songs. Like, yeah, no wonder she's feeling otherworldly.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's making the most of it, you know? And I think this is like, in some ways, this song is like one of those things that like shows you how like, there are, you know, amazing things that you can do just using ordinary objects from your own home. It's sort of like, look, if those of you who are thinking about traveling to other galaxies to levitate, take a moment to consider the Milky Way. Yes, I know it's where we are. It's where we've always been. But why not really, you know, take a moment and we'll go get lost on Mars?
I mean, what I think about is you think about all the money, say, that Elon Musk or a Jeff Bezos has invested in exploring the Milky Way, supposedly exploring the Milky Way. They're taking these space trips that are, you know, they're spending billions of dollars on just to like barely graze the edge of outer space. What if they had just taken that same amount of money, that same amount of capital, and invested it into dating Dua Lipa?
It's a question.
Yeah.
It's a question.
It just seems...
It's a question.
I would almost say, and this is just something worth considering, that Mars might even be an unnecessary leap. There are places that you can get lost right here on Earth.
You should be on the tourism board for Earth.
Yeah. It's like, why not? Why not? Because it is, from a practical standpoint, very hard for a person to get to Mars. It's never been done.
Sure.
And she's making it sound easy, and I'm wondering whether that isn't perhaps more fantastical than it needs to be, because I think the heart of the song is in I Know a Galaxy, and it's the Milky Way, and that's a big reveal. And then it gets aspirational in a way that feels maybe discouraging to people who are like, Mars? I've never been out of Idaho. I spent my whole life here. And it's like, well, there are places to get lost in Idaho.
Yeah.
You can levitate in Idaho.
Yeah.
You can
beautiful
go up in the stars in the
lakes.
Sky. The stars in the sky. If you levitate, get up, you know, about 2 miles up. I think that's pretty tremendous. If you could levitate about 2 miles up.
As long as we've established the power of levitation, we could do pretty well.
Yeah.
In the continental 48 states.
Yeah.
The Grand Canyon, you get really lost there, see some amazing stuff. We know less about the bottom of our own oceans than we do about the surface of Mars.
Yeah.
Let's check out those mysteries.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, there's a little touch of James Cameron in your ambition there. Wow. Let's go to the bottom of the ocean.
I'm submarining. The thing that we really haven't yet talked about is just the retro vibes of this song, the retro sound, and how just how powerful it is.
Yeah.
How like once upon a time in the 90s, people turned up their noses at disco.
Yeah,
we were talking about this a little bit a couple weeks ago when we talked about Upside Down by Diana Ross, but that's a song of the time that is now is still beloved. This is a brand new song that is intentionally coining the sound of disco and bringing in all these dance elements, well, like the retro synth, but there's other pieces of it, the way the bass sounds, the slap bass.
Yeah, and she's specifically said that her major influences are like either late 70s, like Blondie, early 80s, Prince, or 90s bands that were already throwing back to the 70s and 80s, like Jamiroquai.
Yeah, her whole album, what's the name of this record? Future Nostalgia.
Future Nostalgia.
The whole thing is this new disco.
Yeah. And I will say that I love this album. I adore this album. Her first album was kind of hit and miss for me.
Mm-hmm.
And in part, that is because I found it to be like kind of a scattershot sound. Like you'd listen to one song that kind of had a little bit of a disco feel, and then there's a song on I Don't Give a Fuck, IDGAF, that when you listen to it, to me, kind of sounds like almost like an Ed Sheeran sound alike. And then when you listen to that album from back to front, you're sort of like, what is this? And that album was still such a hit that she was almost able to do like a 90s or like 1970s album build for this, where she was in the studio for like 9 months, just spent all this time and money in the studio and really locked into one sound that you hear here on Levitating, but also is just wall-to-wall in the album and makes it an album that I just love to put on around the house.
I want to call out a line that I'm bumping on.
Okay.
And it's just, and maybe this is just me, but I feel like a lot of the lines that are leading off the verses, like, if you want to run away with me, I know a guy like that. You know, like, or if you're feeling like you need a little bit of company. I feel like we're forever every time we get together. The one that I'm bumping on is, I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. There's something about that line that feels a little less satisfying.
That's just classic second verse stuff. That's classic second verse stuff where you're like, well, this is done enough.
But doesn't it feel like the emphasis is getting a little, it's a little bit off in that I believe that you're for me, I feel it in our energy.
Well,
as opposed to like, if you want to run away with me, da 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 da. It kind of feels like it's a little bit like off balance to me.
I'll also say, we're talking about how much she's using her voice like a percussion instrument.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, listen to this, that I was noticing is generally when you're singing, you think about like being on the vowel. You want to like get mm-hmm. through the consonant, the T or the B or the M as fast as possible and be on the, you know, usually when you sing like the word premonition,
yeah.
it's not a word that is sung a lot. You try to get past the P and the R to premonition, be on the E, right? But she, mm-hmm. when you're listening to her sing these lines, she's like way more on the consonant, and then she's past the vowel so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the line you're bumping on has a lot more like softer vowels. It has that soft G and that like.
For me,
I'm gonna play it again. I'm gonna play it again. Let me listen. Let's listen to it, and then yeah. you give me your reaction.
That soft G and
the I is on the downbeat. I believe that you're for me. Feel it in our energy.
I believe that you're for me. Let me hear it again. So it's
yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That first I is on the downbeat. So that there's like one syllable on every 16th note. Here it is. I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy.
I see it's written in the stars. So it's I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. Yeah. I don't know. It's not my favorite line.
Yeah. Well, I
believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. I think it's like energy.
Well, you know, you're a songwriter working on this thing. What is more important when you're trying to write this line? Getting one syllable on every 16th note so that the resulting rhythm is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- Now then, did they make so bad a boo-boo that they undercut some existing thing in the spirit of the song? I believe that you're for me. Well, that's on brand.
I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. I believe that you're for me. I feel, as opposed to how satisfying it feels to be, if you want to run away with me, you know, like, as a, I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy.
Mm-hmm. I will say, I think it sounds better when you sing it, Connor. I think you're nailing it.
I'm overselling it. Please don't. That's the sizzle, not the steak.
I think to me, it's the specificity.
I feel it in. I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy.
I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. Galaxy is just a noun that just like pops off.
Yeah. I think it's like, if you want to run away with me, I know a galaxy. It feels like it's flowing in a way that like, I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. In our energy, as opposed to like, that preposition has too much power there.
I see. Yeah.
I believe that you're for me. I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. It feels like it's wrong.
Get back to the nouns.
I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. Yeah, I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy.
I mean, I do think this could be, hearing you say this over and over again, I think this could be a great personal mantra for you. I feel like just like before a warm-up, like before an audition, before a date, if you just chanted this to yourself, I think it could work for you.
If you're muttering this under your breath a lot on the subway, it's going to work really well for you.
Yeah. So it's like, normally it's like, if you want to run away with me, I know a galaxy. It feels like it's really flown there. If you're feeling like you need a little bit of company. It's like playful, but I believe that you're from me. I feel it in our energy.
If you want to go and take a ride with me, smoke an L in the back of the Benzie. Why must I feel this? You know, I think for me, it's just our energy is distasteful. I think they came up with a little filler here. And
in
this
our
is this is maybe personal, but anyone who starts talking about my energy in a song, it's like I get a bad jam band taste in my mouth.
I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy.
I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. I see it in the stars. It's one continuous line all the way to stars, unbroken, no rests.
Believe that the more I sing it, the more wrong I feel about it.
I'm telling you, it's working for you.
Well, we're definitely getting into
it. It's working for you.
What's the thing? We talked about this before. What's the thing where you say the word so many times it loses meaning, it just becomes sounds? You know, spelunking, spelunking, spelunking.
It keeps getting better.
Yeah, for you.
No, the way you're saying it, it keeps getting better.
That could be your personal mantra right there, Evan. Just say that, you know, if you're warming up, doing an audition, yeah. Say splunking over and over again.
I will. That's just one of the words that I like the sound of it. Another one is ambrosia.
I think what it is like in the, if you want to run away with me, I know a galaxy, as opposed to, I believe that you're from me, I feel it in our energy. It's sort of like.
They put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yes, it feels like that. Because it really should be, I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy.
Mm-hmm. It's the pickup.
I feel it in our energy, not around our energy, not on top of our energy, not below the energy.
It's
you know?
The pickup that's killing you. The pickup that every other line, verse line, is starting on the one. Da 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 da, and this has the pickup before the one to get to it.
Guys,
and
I have to cut you off. I have to cut you off here because you have gaslit your own selves. We listen to the line, I believe that you're for me. And in your own heads, you've repeated it now 10 times and converted it to the one you want it to be. I believe. But it's not that way.
What is it?
It actually is, I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy.
Let's hear it again.
Back and to the left.
Back and to the left.
Back and to the left.
I was about to guarantee
you. I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. I believe that you're from me. I feel it in our energy.
I was going to guarantee you that there'd be no pickups in our punched-up version of the song, mm-hmm. Connor, because this pickup was annoying you so much.
I believe that you're from
now,
me. I feel
now,
it
I think
in
I need
energy.
To guarantee you that if needed,
yeah.
There will be pickups, and we will phrase the lines correctly.
I believe that you're from me. I feel it in our energy. So the emphasis is on feel. I believe that you're from me. I feel it in our energy.
Let me just pitch you guys on something. One thing that we love is the rhythm of this song. It's so extremely danceable, and the voice is being used here as a rhythmic weapon. It's awesome. And yet, she still has to take a breath. At the end, she gets through, you know, what do we have here? I believe that you're for me. I feel it in our energy. I see it in the stars. You know, that's 16 16th notes in a row, then on halfway through the next bar without pausing. But what if there never was a break in the entire song, and she just sung the entire time without taking any breaths? Could we punch it up by making the vocal go constantly like a hi-hat with no rest?
That, for me, also works from a science fiction perspective. That's something that someone who already lives in outer space would do. They don't need air because they live in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. They're getting their oxygen on an IV.
Yeah, we're not even talking about inward singing here. We're just talking about, like, they're a purely oxygenated being, like Jeff Bridges from Starman, just singing on one note, constantly on a 16th note. I love it.
You look a little shell-shocked by that idea.
Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on
let's
from
move
this.
On. I can't take it.
Okay, it's getting. We went a
I'm
little bit too
to,
far
yeah,
in this science fiction.
I will
and
say,
everybody's hungry. We spent an hour before we even started recording eating cashews.
Connor, I will say, seeing how dedicated you are to unpacking this one line, though.
There's just something so satisfying about every other iteration of that line that this one kind of, it doesn't stick with me. And even the fact that it morphs when we talk about it into other things, it emphasizes what's wrong with it, that it doesn't stick with you. I would never sing the other lines in a wrong way, whereas this one keeps trying to bend into a different shape.
Yes, you've correctly identified the most forgettable line.
Seeing your dedication to fixing this line, to me, speaks to your passion for figuring out what went wrong with Tom Hanks. I just want to say, for all those Dead Eyes listeners with us, it's like, I'm seeing the wheels turning in your head. You're going to be talking about this line in 10 years, I can tell.
Yeah. Because, like, the I was like, believe that, there's something there.
I got my rubber ducky in, then we jump in.
You got a rubber ducky in, you got a rubber ducky in, we're rubber ducky all the time.
Mm-hmm. Give me a cheeseburger and I'll see you on the corner.
I ate a burger.
I scrub in armpits. Let me jump ahead to, we'll just listen along to the next chorus, say, which everyone can agree is an A+, and we only have one remaining section where we're going to get back to this problem of rhythmic density.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to like a little rapped bridge. Let's listen through to that.
I love that vocoder.
You guys hear that talk box?
Yeah, that talk box vocoder is so cool.
This is a little bit new.
This is a nice little, like, post-chorus.
What were you saying, Andrew?
No, it's just like that a little post-chorus.
New. Yeah, we call that a little post-chorus. Like, it's still in the vamp of the chorus. It's still the same energy level, but they just wanted to extend it. That feels really good.
One thing that's really fun is that she calls you Moonlight. I got you Moonlight, you're my starlight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny because it's like, Batman, you're my Superman.
It's very like you're my yin and my yang.
Yeah,
you're these
Moonlight,
two opposite things.
You're my starlight.
That's funny because I didn't see it as her labeling you as Moonlight as an appositive, but rather just listing things that are around. I have
you thought it was a list. I got
this
you,
is a grocery
Moonlight,
list. I have you. I,
also,
what,
you're my
list
starlight.
Our assets. We have a wheelbarrow, a Holocaust cloak.
Right, but it's I got you Moonlight. You're my starlight. I think it's like, I've met you, Doctor. You're my nurse.
Mm-hmm.
he was dead the whole time.
I really like, one of my favorite things is after you can fly away with me tonight, you can fly away with me tonight.
Yep.
I like that. I really like that part. Yeah. You can fly away with me tonight. You can fly away with me tonight.
It really takes it back to.
What do you call that? What do you call that?
I would call it like a question and answer. You know.
The night. You can fly away with me tonight. Basic. You can fly away with me tonight. But then you can fly away with me tonight.
It's kind of like let's call it a variation on a theme.
That little trill, that little melisma. Yeah.
They're similar phrases, but just a little different. And it's also taking it back to a conditional place.
Yeah.
It said, like, the choruses have said, like, we're going to do all this crazy stuff. Well, you could.
You can fly away with me tonight.
You don't have to.
You can fly away with me tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You can fly away with me tonight.
That's just great writing because now if you heard the same thing twice, it sucks.
As a child, I was forced to go to Catholic Mass,
mm-hmm.
and it does start to feel like, you can fly away with me tonight.
Yes.
You can fly away with me tonight.
It's definitely in the same minor mode.
With him and in him. In the unity of the Holy Spirit, you can fly away with me tonight. You can fly away with me tonight.
This is sending me back to the 90s when all of a sudden, for like 6 months, Gregorian chants were popular. And you'd get like a cover album of people doing Gregorian chants of pop songs. This would crush on a Gregorian chant.
You can fly away with me tonight.
And
you can fly away with me tonight.
We will go to the end of the song, you'd have to hit him, Evan, with the Picardy.
Yeah.
You'd have to play it on the piano. You'd have to, at the very end of the song, you can fly away with me.
Me. You can fly.
No, the Picardy. They never expect the Picardy at
they
the end of the
song. You
can fly away with me tonight. Very good.
This is maybe the most fully fleshed out idea we have yet for a punch-up.
Yeah. I also love the idea of Gregorian monks thinking so deeply about astronomy. You know, you can just imagine.
They stare at the stars. Yeah. You know, they must think about that.
What else do? They work out in the fields. They go meditate for about 8 hours, and then you look at the constellations.
They live like high in the Swiss Alps, and they're like, whatever we discover beyond this, we must not tell Pope John. He has told us we must end our investigations, but brother, I'm simply levitating at our latest discovery.
What is this that you are talking about?
God has put this glitter in the sky.
Are those monks also lovers? I'll leave our listeners to decide. This is starting to sound like a Showtime series to me.
And I'm feeling so electric, that's my awesome.
Okay, quick interjection here. She has said in a lot of interviews that the reason she wanted to include the rap is because she thought people did not know she was British. And she said, I have to, I swear to God this is true. She said, yeah. I have to rap so people will hear my British pronunciation. Until I read those interviews this whole time, I thought she said that she was dancing with John Ossoff, the senator from Georgia. No. Hmm. She's dancing her ass off, and that's how British people say it.
Ass off.
Ass. My love is like a rocket, watch it blast off.
Do British people really talk like that?
Dance my ass off.
Dance my ass off. Well, they say arse more in England. Dance my arse off.
There's different twists on the Southie arse.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of, like, ass is not really a word in England that's used. It's sort of like, unless they're referring to a donkey.
This is a great point. We're talking
made an ass.
We're talking
yourself.
To a trained thespian here who's probably got more insight on the different sub accents on the in the British Isles.
It's complicated.
And this is sort of like just a British vowel on an American word.
Yeah.
Only Americans
dance
are saying
my
ass.
Dance my ass off.
Yeah, very. That was the very
more
proper.
Commonly. I think it'd be dancing your arse off.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It may, you know, I haven't been. I haven't lived in England for.
Well,
a
if you're
of
a really crude selfie, somebody right. with a. With a shit accent,
off, haven't I?
Yeah,
I danced my ass off, haven't I?
Yeah, it fell off in the street.
Right. My so let's think about it. My love is like a rocket, watch it blast off, and I'm feeling so electric, dance my ass off, and even if I wanted to, I can't stop.
Yeah.
All right.
This also to me is like what really pins one of her main influences is being. Blondie, which she has said a lot, that her parents loved Blondie. They would listen to Blondie albums. Her parents grew up in Kosovo. They're Albanian, moved to London. She grew up in London, but they loved Blondie. They would put on Blondie records. And Blondie had the, much to many people's surprise, the first ever number one rap song was a Blondie song. The Blondie song Raptures. I feel like just like Blondie's Rapture was very tongue-in-cheek about like, well, you didn't expect us to rap, but we're going to rap, and it's kind of going to be a like a rock band rapping. I think this is kind of like a tongue-in-cheek reference to Blondie, where she's not trying to prove she is the greatest MC of all time. She's just trying to have some fun, guys.
Mm. Yeah, this section's fun.
I love it.
I like it because it just keeps this party vibe happening with a little bit of variation. If you introduce a little bit of variation, you can keep what musically is still very similar.
And it's like a sonnet. You know, my love is like a rocket.
Yeah.
Watch it blast off.
It's well, extremely Shakespearean. But I submit to you that I feel like it's a little bit of a step back thematically in a bad way, in the sense like before this, it felt like maybe we were really going extraplanetary. Like maybe in this song, we're really going to Mars. But right. Now she's actually reduced it to a simile. Now it's like maybe the whole time I was just talking in metaphor. That's a bummer to me.
It's also like up to now it's been a thing we're going to do together, and now it's a little bit like, hey, watch me do a cannonball. And so we're like, hey, look, my love is like a rocket. Watch it blast off.
We sort of like rescinded the invitation. Now I'm going out in the middle of the dance floor and doing full Travolta.
Also, kind of calling into question, I feel like the earlier choruses, the earlier verses are, in a way that is pleasant to me, drawing such a metaphorical comparison to sex. Mm-hmm. We're levitating, we're in love, we're having sex. Wait, was this song just about dancing? Was it just about dancing when you're talking about dancing? Or are you trying to pull the wool over my eyes and make me think that you were just singing about dancing when obviously you and I both know you were talking about sex?
There's also an unrealistic aspiration that most party songs have. And a lot of love songs have this too. Like, I'm going to dance all night. Maybe you are. But there's a price to be paid for that. You're not going to dance forever. And it's like, even if I wanted to, I can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe, and this is perhaps a rational and borderline curmudgeonly take on this. She will stop. Everyone stops.
Yeah, in death.
So you say I can't stop. I get the feeling that at a certain point, everyone has limits. And even if I wanted to, I can't stop. I feel like, well, that's just a feeling. It's describing a feeling. But the party will come to an end at some point. And it does the even if I wanted to, I can't stop, does make me call into question a lot of the statements before. Was she levitating, or did she just feel like she was levitating? Like, how many of the, how much of this is factual, and how much of this is empty promises born of genuine enthusiasm?
Sure.
Let's get lost on Mars. Do you even realize that no one has ever, was that always a metaphor? Was it a simile? Like, were you just being poetic?
It's not like the movie The Martian, guys. You die. You would die there doing it.
You're not going to raise crops using your own fecal matter as fertilizer.
I'm going to say this level of wisdom and realism, Connor, coming from you, I would say is the sort of thing I would frankly expect from like the head of a Gregorian abbey, and it's really working for me.
Yeah.
We've all been there. You make strong statements, you overreach based on your feeling in the moment.
It's not
I'd really like to see you for a third date.
It's not a flaw in the song. it's a foible. It makes the song more human because the ambition of the central character, who is ultimately, I think we're discovering, an unreliable narrator, and there's nothing wrong with that. It actually makes the song more dynamic psychologically to know that a lot of these bold statements, ultimately, by the time you get to the end of this, my love is like a rocket, watch it blast off, and I'm feeling so electric, dance my ass off, and even if I wanted to, I can't stop.
The statement is made by a fool, but the song is also revealing that what are we all but fools?
Yeah, it's sort of like if I was doing a music video for this, I think that the everything up to the rap section would sort of look like the promises of, like, we're going to go into space.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, it would be filmed very simply, and it would just be someone who, like, turns around at the end, and they're just in a club and just, like, they just dance. And it's just one person dancing, the other person sort of staring at them like, I thought we were actually going to go to Mars. But it's just like, I love to dance. And it's just someone, like, dancing by themselves.
Just having a great Friday.
And it maybe doesn't even look cool, and maybe the music isn't even, like, is a little bit muted at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's like, oh, okay.
Not a cool New York City or a cool Los Angeles club. We're talking about the coolest club in Boise, Idaho. That's the club they're in.
Yeah, and that the end might be a little bit of a rug pull, where we see the person who's been sort of like hyped up being like, oh, your love is like a rocket. I'm supposed to watch you dance your ass off.
Oh, honey, I thought we were just going out for dinner.
And also what would be funny is if we actually got John Ossoff as a cameo, like he's one of the other people dancing in the club, because I imagine he's probably not, that's not too cool.
Right, he's screaming probably like, honey, we're paying the babysitter overtime.
Yeah.
And just a visual pun for the audience.
Visual pun and maybe even a little chyron that says, this is her Ossoff.
Right.
Senator John Ossoff. Senator?
Senator John Ossoff.
What party?
He's Democrat.
All right, good guy. I'm vaguely familiar, but I'm not wildly familiar.
I don't feel like I can make any declarative statements about whether he's
a good
person.
Are you endorsing him for re-election? Can we get that?
Here's what I'll say declaratively. This week will be the first week that instead of making a punched-up song, we're going to make a full video.
Mm-hmm.
John Ossoff will be in it.
Great.
Senator John Ossoff.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I will find out during the 1 hour he's on set whether he's a good guy or not, and it'll be funded by his slush fund. He'll give us money to make a music video, and then we'll use it as a fundraiser for him. Dua Lipa will be in it.
Is this an overreach you're making based on a present feeling?
No, this is going to happen. This is going
to
happen.
I do want to encourage people, and I believe it will happen, but on the off chance that it doesn't, on the off chance that what you are doing is emulating
what the song does.
I know.
Human promises are as hard as rock.
That's a great lyric, and that would be a great song. Human promises are as hard as rock. I hope that people will sync up that part of the song to footage of John Ossoff with a chyron, a big chyron that says Ossoff, and start putting those clips on social media. So when she says, dance my Ossoff, it cuts to a shot of Senator John Ossoff with a big a chyron of his name, Ossoff. I think that's a worthy endeavor for people with just a little bit of free time.
If his supporters aren't already saying, vote my ass off.
Yeah, I'm feeling so electric, vote my ass off.
The amazing thing is it really works either way. John Ossoff, as like a 32-year-old Democratic senator, should 100% be using that in his campaign ads in Atlanta, Georgia. But also, whatever 70-year-old Republican is running against him should 100% being like, Dua Lipa may be John Ossoff's girlfriend. She danced her ass off? Like, just put up some pictures of John Ossoff in black and white. Like, he's out of office immediately. Well, just that energizes the Republican base.
I think that'll backfire. I gotta disagree. I think if the more that any politician is associated with a party anthem of this power, even if it's intended as a slam, yeah, you start feeling the music, and even the most curmudgeonly of conservative grannies are going to start moving those bones, but dancing around to it.
What if the Republicans are using our Gregorian chant version?
It's possible. That does feel more. Does feel more their speed,
guys. I want to play out the rest of the song. We've now heard all of the different unique sections of the song, so we can kind of talk over this as it plays out. But before I do that, let me just play a couple of samples that I lifted of things that are going on in the background that make this the party anthem of such power, as we've alluded to. One is literally the sounds of a party. Here's a little bit of the background vocals that are layered in to add on top of the actual musical content. Check this out.
Yeah! Yeah! Hey! Woo! Woo! Ah!
This is in the song.
That's in the song. So as we play out, but there's more and more of that as the song goes on. It's alluded to in that, yeah. That's when the gang enters.
Paid for by citizens.
And like, what are we hearing? Those are the voices of Dua Lipa and her co-songwriters.
That's great.
Clarence Coffey and Sarah Hudson. And so that's them just like hanging out, I think, just belting out party sounds to add a vibe.
You play that back. I thought I heard something in there.
Yeah.
Paid for by citizens for Senator John Ossoff.
Oh, that's interesting. God.
Senator John Ossoff believes in a freer and fairer America for all citizens.
Makes you think.
You wouldn't hear that on playback, but once we lifted that sample out, it became a little bit clearer.
Wow, missed it the first time.
There's one other thing I'll play for you, which we kind of noted as it was going back, but that is this talk box thing that is happening. What musical function is it forming? It's filling in any amount of dead space. Like, this song is so tightly constructed that any little rest at the end of the bar, they're filling with something. Okay. And there's this awesome talk box thing that comes in.
You want me? I want you, baby. My sugar boo.
My name is Senator John Ossoff, and I approve this message.
Come on. It's so incredible. I mean, it's like the same that same talk box feeling from Moe Bounce, 40 years ago from Roger Troutman. But not only does it just it's such an awesome instrument, but it also supports the interstellar theme.
Yeah, it's so alien.
This is what robots do. This is robot music, alien music.
I love it.
So, now play out the rest of the song.
Let's play it out.
And you can hear those little details jumping in and out and just lifting the vibe up.
You want me, I want you, baby. My sugar boo, I'm levitating. The Milky Way, we're renegading.
Yeah.
I got you, moonlight, you're my starlight.
Hear those yells in the background?
We know the acapella version works. We know the acapella version works from that. Oh, they broke it down, then they built it back up.
So you can hear the talk box at the end of every phrase, just filling it in.
Cool.
I saw an interview with Roger Troutman once. He's the guy from Cameo that was like pioneering the talk box sound. That was done at the time where he's just saying, like, I don't know, I just tried this once and everyone flooded to the dance floor. And then I was like, well, I guess that's just my thing. I'm playing talkbox all the time. And that's 100% what's going on here. It just like it lifts the song even more.
And I love how quickly they cut out of it. You know, it's like they build it up so big. And then play the last 5 seconds of it.
Okay.
Oh, just her voice. I love that finish.
The song is over.
As your life also once will be when you no longer dance.
Yeah. Think you can't stop? Mm-hmm. Guess what? The song ends.
La da da. All men are mortal.
Okay, so Connor, I think we have our work cut out for us, but I also think that we've blazed a path.
You know what I also think would, as I listen to the song, this feels like there could be an arrangement that Sinatra could have sung of this. You know? I feel like this would also, like, I hope people will start doing lots of different kinds of covers of this. Because I could really imagine a sort of, like, Nelson Riddle kind of songs for swinging lovers type arrangement for this. That would be really fun.
Yeah, you could only wish that this song was released in 1972 so we could have, like, a Dean Martin version, a Frank Sinatra version, and a Sammy Davis Jr. version.
If you want to run away with me, I know a galaxy and I can take you for a ride.
Right.
Isn't that literally Fly Me to the Moon?
Yeah, fly me to the moon and let me...
All the hardness of it is out of the consonants, and it's, like, all soft and on the vowels, yeah.
Glitter in the sky, glitter in my eyes, shining just the way I like. If you're feeling like you need a little bit of company, you met me at the perfect time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. You want me. I want you, baby. My sugar boo.
That's extremely...
I'm levitating.
Doobie doobie sugar boo. It's very Sinatra.
The Milky Way. We're renegading. It's yeah, like
He started writing Fly Me to the Moon, just took out the sentence structure. Yeah. Milky Way. We're listing stuff.
I got you, moonlight, you're my starlight, I need you. The song has endless potential.
We will take the Sinatra crooner take into consideration. Mm-hmm. We're taking it into consideration.
We can only
do one punch up a week.
We already have so many things in our back pocket. The Sinatra thing has now got to fit into your fifth change pocket in terms of the amount of ideas we're walking away with here. But I'm not going to say this is an easy lift. This is a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An easy lift, Evan, or dare I say it, an easy levitate?
We're gonna
take a break.
We're gonna take a break,
Connor. We're gonna go away for at least a week or two. We're gonna work on this punch up, and when we come back, we'll have an absolutely 100% better version of Dua Lipa's Levitating for You.
Can I just say this? You better.
We are back, folks. Connor Ratliff is here on the pod, and we are happy that he came back to our podcast now. It's harder to do than you think to keep those syllables working like that.
I don't know. I think people probably thought it was pretty hard after we went over it in detail.
So we talked about a lot of ways we could improve this song a couple weeks ago, Connor.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about an astronomical angle.
Yeah.
We talked about a historical angle.
We did, yes. And there was a lot of talk. You know, and talk is cheap.
It comes easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easy to say this and that. You just open your mouth and the words tumble out. Putting those words into action is an entirely different proposition.
Can you walk the walk?
Talk is cheap, but you walk up to the door of a concert and you'd say, I'd like one ticket for singing, please. And they say, wait, you need to give me money. That's expensive.
Yeah, you have to actually pay money. We hit on one idea during our conversation that really stuck in our heads as we went off to come up with a punch up. And that was... the notion that we discovered somewhat organically that there is a melody baked into this song that seemed to be somewhat medieval. It seemed to be monkey in nature. Benedictine, Franciscan, perhaps.
Built from the synthesizer. The synthesizer sounded like a choir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And once we started thinking about that, our brains, dare I say it, we're just spinning off into orbit. Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So what we've got for you here, Connor, is Levitating as sung by a choir of monks. I think it's been punched up severely, and the monks have a very specific angle on the high stakes of understanding astronomy. Namely, if they were to go public with their knowledge of a heliocentric solar system, they could lose their careers, maybe their lives.
Oh.
This is dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
Really raises the stakes. Without further ado.
Whoa. discuss and think about our galaxy where God has placed us on this globe. If you meditate a moment on the spinning firmament, we're wrong about what we know. Stars up in the sky, clearly to my eyes, it seems no two alike. Keep it in the Abbey Vowel silence, don't be bloody, it's communications on the line. You're thinking, I'm thinking maybe, my double boo, we are rotating around the sun. We're renegading, yeah, 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 amen. It's true, moonlight is reflected, starlight, it is me. Upright, the church will banish me out of her day. Moonlight is reflected, starlight, it is me. Upright, the church will banish me out of her day.
The monks can still dance.
I believe
though.
In what we've seen, despite Genesis 1:16, His Holiness can never know. Weeded by the Inquisition, I prefer my head's position on my neck and not a pole. The Earth around the Sun, we surely would be shunned for this discovery. Hide a secret in a jar, bury it somewhere afar, it's simply heresy. You're thinking, I'm thinking maybe, my double boo, we are rotating around the Sun, we're renegading, yeah, 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 amen. It's true. Moonlight is reflected, starlight, it is me. Upright, the church will banish me.
It is true.
Moonlight is reflected, starlight, it is me. Upright, the church will banish me. Out of the day. Will you go on with me in the night? Will you go on with me in the night? I can take my eyes off of the sky, yeah, yeah, yeah. Possessions I have cast off. Nothing to weigh me down, dance my ass off. If the Abbey kegs are pouring, then I can't stop. Yeah, 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 amen. My lordly possessions I have cast off. Nothing to weigh me down, dance my ass off. If the Abbey kegs are pouring, then I can't stop. Yeah, 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 amen. You thinking, I'm thinking maybe, my double boo, we are rotating around the sun. We're renegading, yeah, 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 amen. It's true, moonlight is reflected, starlight, it gives me.
Even the monks like a little breakdown here.
Oh, Johannes Kepler, eat your heart out.
Wow. I like the fact that it still lands with Dance My Ass Off.
There's one thing that's universal. Yeah, the monks are not going to leave that behind.
This is still a party. Let's not forget. The stakes are higher. There is more risk in this incarnation of the tale being spun. But it does still end in a party. Like let's not lose sight of that.
Yes, exactly. Right. That's exactly right. Let's not lose sight of the party. And you could say that these guys have even more reason to rejoice. They've made a serious discovery here.
Yeah, but and also though, this is the last night before their scrolls are scrolled up and put in an earthenware jar and buried somewhere high in the Alps, so that the church never knows about the heliocentric universe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you got to have a little party to celebrate the scrolls going in the earthenware jar.
Yeah, you open up the cask of delirium tremens for this one for sure.
Mm. Well, I think it's certainly punched up. It feels enriched. You know, the original, it feels like we're sort of going into the future. And this also feels like we're going into the future, but from the perspective of the past. So we've shifted our timeline, but we're still heading in the same direction.
Yeah.
It's kind of the prequel that's also the sequel at the same time.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now, one thing I wasn't thinking about while we were writing this, Evan, but we... In the original, they talk about Sugar Boo, and Dua Lipa said, like, that's a nickname we had for each other, but also we just really love sugar, we're eating donuts while we're at the recording session.
Yeah.
So we use Sugar Boo, and Evan and I talked a lot about what would a Trappist monk love as much as sugar, and we talked about honey, we talked about other, like, farmed goods, and then we were like, no, obviously a Trappist monk likes the end product of their brewing the best, which is a fine Trappist double beer. But I can't help but now, only in retrospect, realize that, you know, what is a double but a bunch of refined and fermented sugars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've taken mm-hmm. the sugar boo mm-hmm. of Dua Lipa and just put it in a cask, let it sit,
mm-hmm.
and let all those sugars become, you know, a refined, tasty double.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting the echoes that you found in this. It doesn't just punch up, it complements. These songs exist in partnership with one another. In
speaking
a way that I
think to each
is,
other.
It feels divinely inspired.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's the way we felt, and we've brought it here for you to confirm that.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
And I also want to emphasize that in the fictional world of the monk version of levitating, at least two of these monks are also in partnership with each other.
Sure.
Are they? Yeah. Do they have to hide it from the church? Maybe. Are they hiding it from everyone at this cool abbey? Probably not.
No. If they are, I don't think they're succeeding at hiding it. I think it's clear to all.
You're exactly right.
It's known. What do you think happened to the scrolls, Andrew, after they buried them?
I think they were probably discovered in like the 1900s, and it was like a really cool archaeological discovery,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, wow, these monks in the 12 or 1300s knew about this, but no longer good astronomical discovery because Kepler and Galileo have already, you know, uncovered everything that these monks discovered just from lying on their backs and staring up at the sky high in the Alps above. I guess probably not any air pollution in 1200s Switzerland, above or below the Alps.
I think you're right that we can assume that once this beat has been established in their hearts and in their in their collectiveness, the beat persists. The beat would continue after the song is finished.
Long after the dancing had stopped, the dancing in their hearts would continue.
Yeah, and a secret like this, a secret about the heliocentric universe. On one hand, you want that out, but on the other hand, think of the energization you would have constantly in your life to know such an enormous secret and know that all your friends knew it too. You'd written this great song about it, after all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's something to hold on to tightly.
Thanks for receiving this with such generosity. I knew that after we played this punch-up, I'd feel like dancing, but I didn't expect to experience this inner peace that I'm feeling.
Same.
When someone tells you something that is true on a deep level, sometimes the only response that feels correct in scale is to say nothing.
When someone gives you a gift, the thanks can be in the space between you. It doesn't have to be spoken. It can be seen. It can be felt.
I wish I had known that was something I could have said when I was a child. Every now and then when someone would give me something and my parents would be say thank you before I got a chance to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a good. I feel like we should gift that to the children of the world whose parents are too quick to tell them, say thank you. Remember that feeling?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that feeling.
What you just said, I feel like you should write that out, print it up, and it should be given to all children as something that they can say as a little snapback to those parents who've come in too quickly with a thank you suggestion.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that could be our present, having a conversation with the future. Our two timelines can be intertwined in that way.
Oh, that's an interesting. I mean, I feel like I'm processing everything on a deeper level now. The things we say in the present are the first part of a conversation that will continue in the future.
That's right. We think of the present as a fleeting moment that exists for less than a blink of an eye, and then it's part of the past. But in fact,
we think of a present in another context as a gift that we are given. But in fact, the present moment is the greatest gift of all.
You guys,
unless you're having a really bad time, in which case sometimes the present is just like not a great gift at all. We shouldn't discount that.
Sometimes it sucks. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't love that.
All I know is that this is the kind of thinking about the present moment that you all would probably have to hide from Pope Pius VII. He would not want to be hearing this, and you'd have to wrap this up on a scroll, put it in an earthenware jar, and bury it wherever you were.
Yeah, PP7 cannot hear of this. That's what we're calling him, right? PP7?
For sure.
Yeah, when he's not around, he hates that.
He hates PP7.
Oh, yeah. PP7.
Yeah, because that's what PG3 used to call him.
Connor, thank you so much for coming back on to listen to our punch-up of Dua Lipa's Levitating, and we will be back in one moment with your walk-in music. We like to wrap up our show usually with a little segment called walk-in music, but I'm going to spring something on you, Evan.
Oh, no.
And that is, you have a least favorite segment on this show. It's a little segment where I hit you with a little bit of trivia about the song we've talked about.
Okay.
And if you can get the answer, which you usually don't, or if our guests can get the answer.
This is an audio-only format, and you can't see how my face has fallen.
I will Venmo you $5. But I know how much you hate that segment. So this week, I'm going to give you a little twist.
Oh, no.
I'm going to offer you a $5 wager. $5, baby. This wager is pending. We'll update it. This could be a years-long wager. But after listening to a lot of Dua Lipa, reading a lot about Dua Lipa and just like thinking about what level of pop star Dua Lipa is. She's like the global spokesperson of like Evian, Jaguar.
She's top of the pop pyramid.
Versace.
Sure.
I want to offer you and Connor both a $5 wager. You can take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Dua Lipa will be the singer of the next Bond song. I feel very confident.
Okay.
Just
makes
like the place she is in the stratosphere.
I like this. She'll be singing this. This is not a trivia contest. This is
not
pure.
This is pure wager.
Over, under, take this bet or don't.
You guys can take the bet or not. And I mean, I could be wrong because like I looked at the list of who have done Bond songs, like Billie Eilish did the last one, but just two Bond songs ago, it was Jack White. Jack White wasn't at the top of the pop star pyramid at the time. He was just a noted rock and roll singer. So. I'll give you guys.
So you're taking that stand, and you're asking,
yes,
do we
I'm
want to gainsay
it? I'm giving
you
guys 15 seconds to decide. Are you in on this $5 wager or not?
Where will you land if it becomes like a Radiohead situation where a song is commissioned but not used, a la that song Spectre?
I did not know that was even a possibility, but I'm going to say it has to be locked in the final release.
It's not a full Bond song if it's not in the picture, the opening credits.
All right.
I'm taking the wager.
You're taking the wager?
Only because what are you pitting here? You're saying it's either Dua Lipa or it's anyone else in the universe.
Yeah.
Therefore, even though she's clearly the strongest candidate, I must take the wager, and therefore I am betting $5 that somebody non-Dua Lipa will sing the next Bond song.
Connor, are you in or are you out?
I'm going to put it all in on Dua Lipa. I think Dua Lipa is going to sing the next Bond song. Yeah.
Is that a side bet? Are you going to take Connor's too, Evan? Or is this a double $5 wager for you, or is Connor just not taking the wager?
You've exceeded my knowledge of Vegas mechanics at this point. I don't know who I'm betting against or not. I'm just saying.
Like, you'll owe me $5.
I think this
you'll
is
owe
two
me
bets.
$5.
We're agreeing.
I'm taking two bets.
Yeah, two
I'm
bets.
Putting, I'm
There's
putting
$10
bucks
on the table
in.
$10 on the table.
I'm also going to bet you. Okay. And so if we're both right, we'll just exchange the $5 that we get.
Okay. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Right?
This is perfect.
So we're all putting $10
in. And that's definitely how Vegas works.
Yeah.
Okay, but on to the segment we usually finish with. Evan, let's hear the theme song for walk-in music. What is your walk-in music? And it's the segment where each of us talks about the song that we would want to play when we were walking into some perfectly contrived fictional
Let's just be bold
scenario.
And say it. We're just sharing songs we like.
Yeah, we are. But, you know, we're talking about when we would want that perfect song played. I'm not going to play Back in Black when I'm walking down the aisle at my wedding, but I would want to play Back in Black when I'm the closing pitcher for the Mets in Game 7 of the World Series. I'm walking onto the field in the bottom of the ninth. So this week, this is a really simple one for me. This is a song I absolutely adore by a songwriter named Dan Reeder. He's kind of this outsider folk artist. He lives in Germany. He was born in Louisiana. I got turned on to him a couple years ago, and this is my favorite song by him. It's called I Drink Beer, and I think we were talking about Idaho earlier, so I'm just going to go with Idaho. Mm-hmm. This is like you've been out for a long ride on your horse. Mm-hmm. You walk into the bar in Idaho. You don't even know why this bar is here. You're so in the middle of nowhere. There's just one bartender. He's all the way on the other end of the bar. Right when you walk in, the song starts playing. And it's kind of a stretch to say there's a drop in the song, but there is about 30 or 40 seconds in. That's when you walk up to the bar, tip your hat, and ask for your drink. You'll know when it hits.
They went to the house of the man or a mouse and met the mailman there. And the man with a plan, and the man on a mission.
Oh, what a voice.
The man who could do no wrong. They all stood around in the kitchen and sang the following
song. Right here, you touch your hat and say, barkeep.
I drink beer to improve my mind in all war, help mankind.
He brings you over a beer. You drink the single beer. You don't say a word to him or anyone else. Then you leave.
Hey, batter, hey. Swing, batter, swing, hey. Swing away.
This is a tearjerker, man. I love this pick.
I love this song. And it may surprise you, but there's about to be a saxophone solo played by Dan Reeder.
I'm shocked. The song is cinematic. You've described, 5 minutes of a Coen Brothers movie to me just now.
It's like a little off, but in this way that's just so heart-wrenching and perfect, the saxophone solo. This is not a professional saxophone solo playing this. Such pathos to it, dare I say it. What's your pick this weekend?
Man, that's a great pick, Andrew. The song is Dan Reeder, I Drink Beer. Okay, yeah, I'll go next. I have a rare occasion this week where I am bringing an actual walk-in song. I walked into this song one time. But the reason I thought of it is not that reason. The reason I thought of it is because of today's episode. What songs do I love that thought of the idea to have people yelling on the track to create vibe? And the earliest one I can think of, and one of the best in the category, is Got to Give It Up by Marvin Gaye. And this is the first song that my wife and I played when the dance party started at our wedding reception. A lot of long toasts. People were bored and sweaty. Been a while since dinner. And when we flipped the switch on this one, everyone burst out of their seats. That's exactly what you want. It created the party vibe. The beat is classic. The beat is strong. But it's the sound of everybody just talking and vibing and yelling and screaming and having a good time. It passes that energy on to you.
Oh. What a pioneer of party sounds in songs, because, of course, the other Hall of Famer is What's Going On.
Yes, yeah. Same record, I think, What's Going On. Anyway, this song is such a jam. I used this as an actual walk-in song one time. You could say walking into the dance floor.
Talk about a mix.
And it worked.
Talk about a mix of hard and soft sounds. That hard cowbell.
The cowbell.
With a really soft falsetto. Like Dua Lipa learned a lesson from this song.
Yes.
The hards and the softs.
Yeah. Not as much as Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams, who were sued over the use of elements of this song.
It's interesting because actually the hards and the softs is what I now know John Ossoff calls sex.
Sure, doing the hards and softs.
Doing the hards and the softs.
Yeah. You want to do the ups and downs, the hards and softs. Okay, that's my pick, Got to Give It Up by Marvin Gaye.
Great.
Connor, what's your pick?
All right, my pick, and this is sort of a specific, this is a song I really like, but I have a specific thought that I always think about it. Mm-hmm. Which is the song is Pumped Up Kicks, and which is a song about a school shooting. It's about it's a very violent song that sounds very catchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I always imagine that this
I thought it was about shoes.
No, it's only part of it. It's only part of it.
Shoes is just
shoes.
The way in, man.
God.
I always sort of think that this should be the American national anthem now. And this would be what people would sing at ball games. Because it's about, you know, mass shooting, which is a, you know, a constant American phenomenon.
A peculiarly American phenomenon.
And the reason I think about this is because I think the people who would be most bothered by this song becoming the national anthem that is sung at ball games are the people who are most opposed to doing anything to stop gun violence in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of think, like, if we could change this song and if everyone kind of got up, I think it would be a very fun song, everyone to get up and sort of sing the song and kind of dance and maybe make gun gestures at each other. I think it might be the only thing that might prompt part of the country to be like, okay, we are massively misreading the actual wording of the Second Amendment in order to create an extreme interpretation of it.
I get it. So the scenario is not that you've just freshly introduced this as the national anthem and people are mad about that because they would be reactionary,
mm-hmm.
you know, towards such a change. Your scenario is actually this has already been the national anthem. People accept it. They love it.
Yeah, or it could be me just at a ball game and I announce we're not singing the Star Spangled Banner. Instead, I'm going to sing a new national anthem.
Right.
And we're going to do this. And we'll go back to the other one about bombs and Rockets Red Glare that you like so much. What
maybe.
A wonderful song that is,
yeah,
by the way.
Maybe.
And we'll go back to that. But until we do something about gun violence, Pumped Up Kicks is going to be the song we sing at ball games.
So it's a trade. You'll give them back the other national anthem.
If you'll give us some sort of reasonable compromise that we can have rules about restricting weapons designed to kill people that are being used to kill people.
So you're walking onto the field. This ain't the seventh inning stretch. This isn't where people are distracted, checking their phones, going to get hot dogs.
No, the beginning of the game, top of the game.
Everyone's standing up there.
Everyone put your hands on your heart for the new national anthem.
Someone's saying,
that
hey,
will
get
remain
your hat off.
Our national anthem until something is done. Some reasonable legislation to prevent gun violence. Just making an effort. Just some sort of reasonable compromise. You can still hunt, but, like, can we agree? Most people in the opinion polls agree with this. Anyway, this is the song that we're going to sing until that day arrives. And it goes a little something like this. Hands on hearts.
People are mad at you at first, but they're definitely bopping.
But everyone's also starting to bop a little.
Yes, heads bobbing for sure.
Looking around like, is this really the national anthem now?
And is this about what I think it's about?
Yeah.
We're
and not everybody
hostage.
Knows the words yet, but then we get to the chorus.
Yep.
With the pumped up kicks, you better run, route run my gun. All the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, faster than my bullets.
I don't mind if in this scenario you're on mic in the stadium singing along to make
run,
it 100%
clear. Run, outrun my gun. I mean, all the other kids with the pumped up kicks, you better run, faster than my bullets.
I mean, if this is performed like the national anthem is now, Connor's just on the field doing it a cappella, basically.
Yeah.
He's just singing it.
I think I have a little band behind me.
A little, like, a military guy playing a snare.
But maybe also a bass player just pops up, just give a little bit of groove to it.
Yeah, you have to have the bass line on this song. It's a signature line.
Or an a cappella. Doom, doo, doom, 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 doo, doom.
The a cappella group adds a little formality to it.
Up kicks, you better run, outrun my gun.
I mean, if this is the first time it's ever been done, it's probably being done by, like, the official Navy band and choir, you know? You're just up there leading them,
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Fantastic scenario because you're holding people hostage, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, until we get the result we want, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
But they also don't mind being in that hostage situation because the song's just so dang nice.
But I do imagine the people who are really like, I think it was terrible that they did that, are also, it's a one-to-one, it just lines up. They're also the people who's like, so would you agree that maybe there could be some reasonable Gun legislation? Just something, just to make things, can we try to make things a little safer? Okay, well then, good luck singing the original Star Spangled Banner, because all we're going to sing is Pumped Up Kicks until that happens.
We transcended walk-in songs into political hostage taking.
But in a good way.
But in a good way,
in our opinion.
I think less hostage taking than hostage making.
Yeah.
I'm making you a hostage, but I'm not taking you anywhere. We're just still going to watch the ballgame.
You paid for the ticket.
Hey, yeah. You came here of your own volition.
You know, anything could happen.
You know, just me being open to life.
That's David Guetta.
Yeah.
Well, Connor, thank you for sharing that beautiful yet fearful walk-in scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a scary place to be.
Thanks
America
for coming.
In the 21st
century. Present day. Very scary.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on Punch Up the Jam. We just had a blast with you. And if you're listening, if you haven't listened to Deadass already, please do it. Connor, where could people follow you on Twitter, Instagram, or should they just go binge the pod?
I tell you what, if you spell my name right, you'll find me on Twitter. But that's also, there's no guarantees that you will spell my name right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's CONNORRATLIFF. You can also, if you look up the George Lucas talk show, you can find many hours of that online. Deadass available wherever you get podcasts. And I might pop up in a TV show you watch every now and then.
Yeah, many a time I've been watching the old tube. Connor's face flits by.
Pop up.
Commercial, cameo, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you can follow our podcast at Punch Up the Jam. You can follow Evan at Get Some Evan on Twitter, Instagram. You can follow me at A Rose Gregory on Twitter, Instagram. And you can get this week's punch-up along with all the other week's punch-ups, plus some bonus punch-ups at our Patreon, which is patreon.com/Gregory Brothers.
It's been a delight. Thanks again to Connor. Thanks to you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Dig.
Let's punch it.
Was a HeadGum original.